Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 38. And Dave, it's Wednesday. It's Lions Week. And we're going to have a beat writer join us. Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press is going to join us on the back end of the show, as we do every Wednesday. But let's kick things off here. And the Martavis Bryant saga has taken center stage, and it is taking center stage nationally. The Steelers, 4 weeks in a row, between the anthem situation with Villanueva, AB in the water cooler, Bryant last week, and Bryant again this week, are the soap opera story of the NFL.
Yeah, somewhere in there we had the Le'Veon Bell not getting enough carries and James Harrison not getting enough snaps.
right.
Mixed
right.
In.
You got to have more than one storyline for a good soap opera. So, you know.
Boy, as the Steelers turn, probably getting good ratings
exactly.
So far. Yeah, I tell you, it makes you wonder. You know, people say, oh, boy, that, you know, someone on Twitter said, oh, man, that's got to be great for bloggers, you know, all this Martavis Bryant stuff and all like that. And yeah, in a sense, people, you know, that kind of news, you know, draws, you know, I guess some visitors and all. But, you know, as I've said countless times, David, it would not hurt my feelings at all if all I had to do was write about, you know, what happens on the field as opposed to off of it. And, like you said, it just seems like, you know, every week since week two or so, it's been a weekly, you know, something. And hopefully, you know, with the bye week approaching quickly, you know, maybe this slows down.
Yeah, it's so let's get into it. And because, you know, some of this stuff came out Sunday, but the Martavis took another spin at it with Josina Anderson of ESPN, basically confirming everything that came out starting Sunday night after the Chiefs game with Ian Rappaport with the trade. And basically, you know, after his teammates defended him in the locker room, you know, that last week, and everybody kind of brushed it off and said he wanted to be traded to the Warriors and all of that kind of stuff, you know, you thought you moved along. And then there's he's going to, you know, not be substituted in this game this week. Well, obviously, while he did get the second most snaps, he was on the field about half the time, roughly. And then he goes off again. Clearly did go off in Instagram, which we did talk about on Monday, mentioning Juju by name, which is probably the most egregious violation of anything that he's done, aside from being suspended, in terms of what's happened this year. And then kind of Josina Anderson quotes him as saying, you know, basically he wants out. He wants his, you know, he's not, you know, he'll play out his year and a half and away he goes. And I'm not tripping. I'm not really familiar with that term, Dave, on my lingo, in terms of exactly what that means. But that's where we stood going into Ben and Mike speaking yesterday. So I'll leave it to you to open us up on your thoughts on how those guys responded and where things are.
Yeah, and I think we got an email or two from some listeners, you know, saying, boy, you guys really taking Martavis Bryant to the woodshed and all like that. Look, I mean,
we hit somebody really got mad at us.
Yeah, you know, our job is to call a spade, you know, and I meant what I said when I called him a cancer. And, you know, like I said, you know, a year ago or whatnot, there's no way this guy's getting a second contract in Pittsburgh, and he's definitely not getting one now. And look,
he's he has now made it, so he's not going to get a big contract from anybody. He's not going to he is toxic, so he's not going to get a big long term deal from anybody. He may get a contract, you know, he may get a longer term deal with some upfront money, but nobody's going to put big guaranteed money. I mean, you know, you can sign a 7-year deal. Who cares if the, you know, the guaranteed money's for the first year? It doesn't matter. You just cut the guy. So he's costing himself money by this behavior.
Yeah, and you throw in the suspension, you know, on top of it and all. But look, I mean, Plaxico, you know, although I don't remember him being at this level as Martavis, he certainly got paid when the Steelers let him walk many moons ago. You know, tall, fast receivers. Look at Mike Wallace, David. I mean, did you envision? I mean, when you look at the free agent landscape every year, there's one or two, three wide receivers that usually get all the money, or most of the money. And you know, we'll see what happens with, you know, with the Steelers next offseason. Let me ask you this before we get more in depth. Will Martavis be in a Steelers uniform next season?
That's a great question. And I've debated that because I was pretty emphatic that and obviously Mike was, and other people have spoken as well. So there's no doubt in my mind that Martavis Bryant will be a Steeler the rest of the season. We can debate how much he's going to play. But it's a very simple equation of this is a Super Bowl winning caliber football team, and Martavis Bryant can add to that. And in dealing him, you're not going to get anything of significance that's going to impact the team this year and may not impact the team in the future. So because you can deal him in the offseason, there really is no point in trading him this year. So the question of this offseason is – the Steelers are going to have to make a decision in the draft because you have to again go to the draft for a wide receiver, probably, you know, somewhere between rounds 2 and 4 to bolster things, because Justin Hunter is not going to be around, and, you know, Darius Heyward-Bey, those two guys aren't going to be receivers. You know, one of them, you know, maybe DHB stays on the roster for another year. Hunter, highly unlikely. So, you know, you have Eli, you're short receivers. So you're going to have to go to the draft to do it. So, If you got a fourth round pick for him, I would say, well, look, the story's still going to be told. If you put a gun to my head right now, I would say yes, but I would say yes 55-45.
Yeah, I'd flip flop your numbers for me. I think there's a greater chance of him being dealt during the offseason. But then once again, you have to look at it this way: how many teams are going to trade a third or fourth or fifth round pick for a guy that's a that's potentially a 1-year rental? So
right, and you're not sure. I don't think with the contract he has, he's going to be incredibly cheap. If the season plays out as just kind of he catches 30 more balls and isn't terrible, isn't a distraction, there's no upside in moving him, and the upside of keeping him is pretty high. So, and if you ended up cutting him, you can cut him. So you know, we'll see, but you're right. The market, you know, he's killed his market himself. He's killed his own value. Everything he's done, he's more or less brought on himself. So I don't feel quite like he's a cancer quite as much as you do. We heard Ben say that he's a good teammate. We've heard this kind of across the board. There's been opportunity now to throw Martavis under the bus. And Ben was very critical of him on how he handled things 2 years ago, saying he lied to me directly. But you know, Mike has said it, and Ben has said it, and some other guys in the locker room have said, you know, he hasn't been a distraction. What he does when he's in the facility and when he's on the field is all fine. So all of this stuff is coming, you know, when he's not around. And Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News wrote about it last night. Some other people have written about it. We're all guessing, you know, is it his agent? I'm sure it's his agent driving this, because his agent wants his cut of the pie too. So, but just the idea – it's been really poorly handled. And I thought Mike handled the press conference and Mike's comments before any questions were asked were spot on. And, you know, I thought he handled it perfectly.
Yeah. And let me make it clear. I still think Martavis is a incredibly talented athlete that can make big plays for you. I think he obviously makes defenses, you know, have to
respect it,
right? Account for him,
yep.
And that in turn, helps the other wide receivers on the field. So he has value to the Steelers still. He's look, I can envision a game later on this season where he has three touchdowns and 180 yards. Okay, that's still possible. And then of course, you know, fans are going to go nuts saying, "Where are those people now that wanted to trade Martavis?" I'm totally accepting that a game like that's going to happen. The problem is what's going to happen with the other three or four when he's only catching, when he's only getting targeted three times and catching two balls for 38 yards and no touchdowns,
Well, Mike is going to take him to the woodshed today, I would imagine. And
that's a good question. I mean, what should happen? People saying, is he going to be sat down for the rest of the year? Well, I think the obvious answer to that is no.
Let's be clear about one thing here. Mike Tomlin doesn't have a doghouse. Mike Tomlin will impose discipline if guys like Eli Rogers apparently missing a walkthrough before the Patriots game last year. If guys violate accepted norms or team rules, written or unwritten, they could be disciplined. But Mike Tomlin doesn't have a doghouse. If you don't play well, you don't play. It's the same for Bill Belichick. It's the same for Mike Tomlin. But it's not, because you were on social media, look, we'll deal with it, whatever the punishment is, and we will move forward and you will get your opportunity. Eli Rogers dropped a punt. Mike wanted to give Justin Hunter a chance. He gets his chance, didn't do much with it. You listen to Mike Tomlin yesterday, and all of a sudden you feel like Eli Rogers might all of a sudden become a big part of the offense again. I mean, there is an opportunity for Martavis Bryant, after whatever discipline is imposed is taken care of, to come back and be a big part of this offense.
Boy, if you sat him down this week on a nationally televised game, a Sunday night game.
Do you think he will? What do you think he... I mean, obviously he's going to talk to him and he's going to be stern with him. But do you think there will be discipline that you and I will visibly see, which means either dresses and doesn't play or doesn't dress? And do you think there will be some kind of playing time activity punishment?
I will be surprised if he's inactive. Let me put it to you that way. Will he not be on the field for the opening series? Will he be held out for the first quarter? Have we ever known Mike Tomlin to hold a player out for a quarter? Maybe Santonio a couple years ago, or several years ago, after he was busted with wasn't he held out in the first quarter, or was he inactive that game? I don't remember off the top of my head. I had to research that. I'll be shocked if he's inactive. And boy, you want to talk about a guy getting mad then. Like I said, if you make him inactive.
Well, does it get him mad, or does he accept that? Look, let's say a couple other things about him. He's 25 years old. He's not the brightest guy he's not the brightest tool, sharpest bulb, whatever you want to say. He's
the brightest light bulb on the cake, right?
Yeah, exactly. He isn't. The sharpest light bulb on the cake, I think, is what I was looking for.
There you go. That's perfect.
So I think there's probably a level of kind of respect that he has for Mike Tomlin that, they sit down and have a man-to-man conversation, and Martavis might handle that well. I mean, look, my opinion here, obviously, I don't necessarily think Martavis Bryant is a bad person. There are bad people in the NFL, not tons of them, but there are bad people in the NFL, and there have been bad guys on the Steelers. I don't think Martavis Bryant is a bad guy. I think Martavis Bryant is not a very smart guy who's not getting some great advice now, who's made some bad life decisions, both at Clemson, whatever you want to think about having a kid when you're 18 and you're not married and how that's going to impact your life, personally, I don't think that's a great life decision. You want to plan a little better than that. And then going to the NFL as he's not going to be eligible at Clemson, I think the case was. He comes out as a fourth round pick. And then he gets suspended twice and repeated violations. I mean, this is supposedly there's stories in the backwater channels that these are 10 or 11 violations that got him the year suspension. So you're obviously not making good decisions. But maybe a conversation with Mike Tomlin, he can have there will be a respectful conversation on both sides, And Martavis will move forward and realize that for the balance of this season, after we get past next Tuesday or Wednesday, the trade deadline, there is nothing he can do. The only thing he can do to increase his stock is to play well, and anything else will just decrease his value. That's it, period.
Yeah, I think he's – look, I don't think he's a bad guy, but I do think he's a cancer with his actions, and I think he's a misguided guy. Whether it be agent, whether it be his girlfriend, you know, the people that you surround yourself with really make a huge difference, you know, in any facet of life. And you said it, you know, the best way for him to get himself here, you know what I would do if I was him? I would change agents. I would sign with Drew Rosenhaus. I know it's as disgusting as that sounds.
No, he's a he's a respected, smart, you know, businessman.
I would get a new agent and obviously he's probably hurting from, as strange as it might sound, he's probably hurting for money right now. And do everything I can to try to to repair my image, because let's face it, for the time being, outside of maybe a big game here and there, he's going to be in the doghouse with most of the Steelers fan base. Okay,
And I'll tell you, so two things about that. One is, you know, he did. I saw some people on Twitter really praising him for what he did in the off, you know, getting back into the league. I'm willing to give him credit for that. But he got himself out of the league. So, you know, I don't want to – let's balance the situation here. You know, he made a ton of bad decisions to get where he was, and then he did what was necessary to get back in the league. Okay, good for him. So he showed over a period of time that he could make good and disciplined decisions. I don't know that there's anything that he can do to repair his image other than just absolutely ball out and have things go great. Because I'm not even sure if him catching two passes a game the rest of the year and him just not saying anything and being a good citizen, I'm not sure that repairs his image. It obviously won't hurt his image. But, it is going to be tough for him to, get, as you say, get back on the right side from here.
And look, I know you and I probably didn't intend to open up this show with
20 minutes of Martavis.
Right, Martavis Bryant Depot, or as some folks would say, Martavius Bryant Depot.
Fortunately, anybody who now screws that name up nationally, they should get fined. Because I lived through that doing so many interviews and stuff that I stopped correcting people. But, man, from now, if you miss it now, you haven't been paying attention.
All right, let's try to close this out with this.
Catches for the rest of the year. Steelers have 9 games left. Does he catch 50 balls?
Well, this is my point. Do you purposely try to get him more involved in the offense? Do you purposely try to make sure that we got to get Martavis Bryant X amount of balls? Remember, this is a guy that has what? A career catch rate of what? 50%? 51%? I mean, yeah.
You have to tell people it's incredibly low.
Well, I'm sorry?
You have to give people context for what that number means.
Yeah, that's not great.
No, right. It's low. It's a very low number. But he's got an incredibly high touchdown to catch rate, you know.
Right. I mean, when it's good, when you hit, it's usually good, you know. Yeah. But do you purposely? This is a guy that you throw bubble screens to, you throw 12-yard slants to, and you throw deep balls to. Am I correct? What else?
He's Mike Wallace and Sammy Coates, except he runs a slant.
And he's fast as hell, runs like a gazelle.
He's big. He is big.
You know?
So here, my answer to the question is, the Steelers need more weapons on offense to open things up even more for Bell and Brown. Look, they obviously have shown Bell and Brown are the best in the league at their position. And to have one more weapon, we've seen it when it has worked, just makes everything better. So the answer is Martavis Bryant should be part of the game plan. But just like anything else, you have other things to do. So, do you want to write him into the game plan and have him be a part of it? Absolutely. Do you go out of your way with everything that the Steelers have to do anything special for anybody? Absolutely not. That includes Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. They're part of the game plan. They're going to be a bigger part of the game plan. But you don't go out of your way to do anything that might not be beneficial to the team.
And on 3rd and 11, is that going to be the first guy Ben Roethlisberger looks to, you know, or 3rd and 7, 3rd and 11? Probably not. He is what he is, and that's not going to change. I mean, he's let's call him a two-trick pony, you know.
Do we both think he's dressing on Sunday night?
Yeah, I do. I think he dresses.
I do too. I do too. I think he'll dress.
And you know, look, we'll see. I mean, like I said,
I don't think that's how Mike punishes guys.
I think he's a talented guy. Like I said, I just think that you can't do what the things that he did on Instagram and then follow it up with if they don't cater to making me a bigger role in this offense, you know, I'm not going to re-sign. You know, you just can't do that.
That's okay. So more importantly, where's Juju's bike?
They found it, David.
They did.
They found it. They found
it this morning.
It. Yeah, Mount. What is it?
Mount Washington.
Mount Oliver. Some guy was evidently sold that bike, I guess, on the street for $200, and saw the reports and turned it in. So
the guy who bought it.
Yeah, evidently that's what I'm getting from the reports this morning is that the bike is now in police custody and Juju will get it later today. Let's talk about Juju a little bit here. We didn't spend a lot of time on talking about he got less snaps than Martavis this week. He only had 2 catches. We talked about how big one of those catches was. On the 1st and 10 play with less than a minute. He got out of bounds and all.
Right. The other catch was a touchdown. And, so they were both pretty huge, right?
And look, I would probably characterize myself as more of the guy who likes the Barry Sanders reaction or the Heath Miller reaction. You scored the touchdown, you flip it to the official. But I would guess
that 85% of our listeners are in that camp.
But on the flip side, I as a young child did the Billy White Shoes Johnson dance, so there is a facet of me that still doesn't mind, I guess, some celebrations.
I wish somebody would do the Billy White Shoes dance and then the old drop the ball behind your head and fake throwing it forward. I mean, that was the best. I mean, it was always bad when you saw it because he was playing for the Oilers. But, man, that was the best. I love that stuff.
And, look, say what you will, even the most curmudgeon person who does not like TD celebrations, you had to crack a little bit of a smile with that hide-and-seek, okay? It just shows how much of a kid Juju is.
That's exactly the right answer, by the way. Did Antonio Brown know what was going on, or was he just standing there just checking it out?
I'm not sure he did, because I think to hear Le'Veon Bell talk after the game, that was something they came up right there, you know, right before the game and all like that. So
yeah, that's good. I don't think he did either, and certainly Nance. I don't think Nance thought the same thing, but. You hit it right on the head. Juju is all 20-year-old kid.
He's probably 14 going on 25.
For 14 going on 15, maybe. But, you know.
I mean, he's handled himself great in the media with all, I mean.
It's been great. I'm not disparaging. No, this is not at all disparaging. He just is clearly a young guy. And I hope, you know, I mean, for a guy with a concussion, man, he's tweeting a lot. So I don't know. I don't know how bad that concussion is.
And one final thought on that, and I thought that was the way you were going to go here. We've seen a lot of guys, a lot of players come through Pittsburgh and endear themselves in early times only to come contract time. And, you know, once they, you know, that they become different players as they grow up. And it's not uncommon. There's nothing wrong with that. Here, you know, it's just, and I wrote about this earlier in the week, he's a breath of fresh air for a Steelers team that seems to have week in, week out drama right now. So enjoy him and just, he could run for mayor right now. You know,
don't change Juju.
Don't change.
How about, was there anything better than, and by the way, the funniest Steeler on Twitter, I think it's pretty much a no contest. It's Vince Williams. And he gives I'll paraphrase the tweet, is Juju's out there. You know, we got to find my bike. Antonio Brown's offering a reward. Everybody's out there. Team Juju, blah, 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 blah. And Vince Williams drops a, he's a damn second round pick. He's got enough money to buy his ass his own new bike and get a lock while you're at it.
Yeah, and you know what? The brand of bike is a Ghost bike too. And boy, if Ghost doesn't step up to the plate,
yeah, you were good. I saw you say that.
Boy, if they don't step up to the plate to sign him to some sort of endorsement deal right now, they are missing the boat right now. They would sell a ton of bikes in Pittsburgh. I bet if they did something along those lines, but. Juju, we'll see how he's used the rest of the way. And here's the thing about Martavis and Juju and their usage. And well, I guess we can start talking a little bit of football now. If you're going, boy,
30 minutes in.
Yeah, 30. Roosevelt Nix, boy, I'm going to get this guy sent to the Pro Bowl this year. When he's on the field, David, which, you know, has been, you know, what, no more than 20 snaps around, you know, probably anywhere from 12 to, you know, 17 on average. You know, you've got to carve out snaps for him, especially in the first half of games, to have him on the field. So who are you going to not put on the field, especially when you run two tight ends and a guy like Roosevelt?
Yeah, they're running 22 personnel, so, you know, makes it pretty straightforward. You run, you know, pretty straightforward, right? There's not a lot of questions.
Right, and when you do go two wide receivers only, man, I like having Juju out there to try to dig out that safety, as Richard Mann likes to say. That's not a knock on Martavis and his downfield blocking, which has been fantastic. I'm not knocking that, but I'm talking about a run plays in short area of getting a big physical guy over to try to dig out a cornerback or a safety. I think I want Juju on the field in those situations. Does Juju miss? Yes. Does he connect? Yes, he can make a 5-yard gain turn into 17-yard gain on top of it. So, you know, you got to know that Juju and Martavis are going to probably continue to split some snaps here moving forward, especially when Steelers have control of a ball game and running the football, you know, extremely well. So,
the thing here is, you know, with the injuries that we've seen on the offensive line to basically Marcus Gilbert, most importantly, I mean, it's Chris Hubbard's in action. And it's given, I don't know that the Steelers would have played it this way, but it means Vance McDonald has seen the field. And while we've certainly, you know, given Vance McDonald we've dinged him a fair amount for some drop passes, Vance McDonald's been a really good acquisition. He is, you know, David Johnson, he's taken over David Johnson's role, and he is much more upside as a pass catcher. Now, we haven't seen it. Because he hasn't been targeted that much and whatever, the tight ends haven't been used that much. Jesse James didn't have a target this past week, which might be the first time, you know, in the past 2 years. I'd have to look at that. But since Heath retired, I can't imagine there's been a game where Jesse James didn't get a target. But you see Vance McDonald's having an increasing role, and his blocking has been fantastic to the point that he isn't, you know, you talk about Rosie Nix. Well, Vance McDonald also has been a big, big component of this run game success. So it's a very good problem for the Steelers to have in terms of, you know, not having enough snaps to go around to get everybody on the field.
And as the great Matthew Marksy wrote this morning on Steelers Depot, he kind of played, talking about McDonald, he kind of played a starter role before that knee injury on Sunday. And as Matthew pointed out, you know, on the field in that 2-minute offense, instead of James, and you know, had he not gotten injured, he probably would have played the lion's share of the tight end snaps in that game. And yeah, he has problems with the drops, but boy, when he's on the field, sure seems to make a, you know, whether it's two tight ends or him as a lone tight end, which makes a difference in the running game there as well too. So something to look at moving forward here.
I want to stay in on this before we get to the injury report and circle back to a couple things.
Maybe this will be a 2-hour podcast today.
So were you surprised that Mike was effusive as effusive as he was about Eli Rogers? I mean, look, I know I don't have guys, but I have guys that I think, you know, when I think about, and I know you're the same way, guys you think are better players than maybe they're perceived to be, or guys you don't think are as good as they're perceived to be. I think Eli Rogers is a good football player who hasn't kind of achieved what I think he might be able to achieve. And there are a variety of reasons for that. Some of his fault, some of it the offense. But do you expect Eli Rogers now to be, after what Mike said, to be more involved?
More targets, more snaps.
Yeah, all of the above.
Geez, trying to look.
Because he's been a non-factor, really, you know, since week two. He was a big factor the first 2 weeks, and he's been out of the offense. Finally made a catch last game.
It goes back to how do you carve out snaps for him, David?
Right. So that's it. And it's clearly there are three guys for two spots, because DHB and Hunter are not really two guys competing for spots. So if the Steelers are going to play three wide receivers 70% of the time, if it's two wide receivers, Eli's not going to be on the field. It's going to be Antonio Brown and one of the other two guys. If it's one wide receiver, it's going to be either Juju or Antonio Brown, I would imagine, most of the time, because Juju might get that blocking role. And then if it's three wide receivers, well, Juju can play the slot or Eli can play the slot. So, yeah, I think they're probably – he probably only gets, 35% of the snaps at best, right?
He got 16% of the snaps.
He got 50 last year. He was 50% last year.
And see, I mean, like, it goes back to if he's on the field, probably Juju or Martavis isn't.
Which I don't mind rotating the three of them, but the thing is, that's assuming you're three wide receiver sets all the time. And if it's just two wide receiver sets, then Eli's going to lose out. And I'm fine with that too.
And you're probably not going to run a lot when Eli's in the slot.
No, that's true too.
So,
but man, I'm telling you, with ball in his hands, he is Antonio Brown light.
Yeah, I'm not ready to go there. I mean,
he's an elusive dude.
I'd like
to see him back on the punt return gig again too.
His yards after the catch hadn't been all that great for his career. Now, he did slip a nice tackle on his one catch against the Bengals there. He can still have a role in this offense. I'm just not convinced that barring injury, he's going to see 20, 25 snaps a game. You know, he's probably a 2 to 3 target a game guy at best right now, and he better make the most of those targets. And as you said, boy, he better start learning how to return some punts better, you know.
Okay, so let me ask you, is Juju in concussion protocol, or did they say Juju has a concussion?
He said yesterday he was in protocol.
Okay, so that's much better. That's better. You know, it doesn't. Once you say you have a concussion, you are by definition going through the protocol. You can be in protocol with not necessarily having been diagnosed with a concussion. So it'll be interesting to see if Juju does any activity today. With these concussions, as we've talked about, it's rare. It's not unheard of, but it's rare to not practice Wednesday and then be fully able to go by Sunday going through the protocol. Now, we've seen guys who were in the protocol. I think BJ Finney last year was one of them, where Mike said he was in the protocol on Tuesday and he practiced on Wednesday. So I would assume that means they cleared him of really having a concussion, so he didn't have to go through all the steps. So it'd be interesting to see with Juju. And again, you know, he's posting videos yesterday. He's, you know, clearly talking about his bike. He seems, you know, what do we know? But, you know, he's not sitting in a dark room, you know, with no noise. At least let's put it that way.
Yeah, Mike Thomas said he'll be evaluated appropriately. We'll keep an eye on that and inform you as we get information. At worst, I think he's limited with some, drills to see how, you know, make sure
how he responds.
Right, how he responds, and if he practices Thursday and Friday, you know, should be good to go. As far as the rest of the injury report goes, Mike Thomas said on Tuesday, Stephon Tuitt with his back and tackle Marcus Gilbert with his hamstring, both of whom missed Sunday's game against the Bengals with their injuries. You know, maybe there's a shot to play. He says Stephon Tuitt and Marcus Gilbert could be both put in the same category, Tomlin said. They may be available to us this week. We'll give those guys an opportunity to work, and we'll evaluate that work. If it's above the line, we'll leave the door open for those guys in typical Mike Tomlin fashion. Before we talk about both those guys, we already talked about Juju Smith-Schuster and protocol for him right now. Tallman also said that Vance McDonald suffered what he characterized as a knee bruise during the win over the Bengals. That's good news in the broad scope of things. In my opinion, he said it may affect his availability at the early portions of the week in practice, maybe even his effectiveness. We'll see how it goes. If it does, then obviously we'll do what's appropriate there. Stephon Tuitt was on 970 ESPN and DVE with his weekly show at one of the establishments. What day are we? Tuesday night. He says he's hopeful to practice by Thursday fully. He expects to kind of get out there and do something on Wednesday. And he made it sound, of course, they all make it sound like they're going to play. But I believe him. I think Tuitt has a good chance of being back. I don't have a clue about Marcus Gilbert.
I would have said 100% there's no chance Gilbert plays, except for some reason they put him as doubtful rather than out on Friday's injury report. So that confused me a little bit. But we've talked about this. He came back. He played, 20 snaps against Kansas City. He gets hurt again. He misses the Bengals game, and he has a bye week after this week with that hamstring. I can't imagine Marcus Gilbert playing. To it, what I don't understand is – okay, this thing came up out of the blue. So we're now 8 days, 8 days into this, and he's hoping to fully practice Thursday, which means he's not expecting to fully practice today, which to me says you're clearly not ready. I mean, you're guessing you're going to be – so you're going to try to do something Wednesday and see how it feels and then see if you can go full Thursday. Look, let's hope. Let's hope that's the case, but that just doesn't sound particularly optimistic to me.
Here's what he had to say last night. So basically, when you work out and you do things and you don't do things the right way, things can happen. And basically that Monday, we were doing the workout schedule and we was going hard. And next thing you know, something happens. We wanted to make sure the inflammation calmed down in it. Once the inflammation had calmed down in it, we were like, are we ready to go? But with the injury that I had, there's a lot more components in it that were causing it to not just be the inflammation. So we had to.
That's a pretty detailed answer. Okay.
So we had to take the week off just to make sure that everything is settled and everything went in the right way. And then from there, I did my job in healing myself, getting ready to get back on the field in a short period of time. And it's a good talk to be able to say I'll be back out here for the Detroit Lions, and that's the goal. He goes on to say he was asked if he's going to practice Wednesday. No. So to practice tomorrow, we're probably going to practice by Thursday. Wednesday, we're going to make sure we warm it up, get it going, get the flexion back in it and everything. And then after that, Thursday, we'll get going because we don't want to beat it up. There's no point in beating it up. First,
I tell you, that's the longest answer we've ever heard about an injury report ever.
And boy,
good for him.
If you go back through his interviews, he sure likes to use we a lot. And you know who that reminds me of?
The Royal We.
No. Yeah.
Ricky said Ricky all the time. Ricky thinks that the A's are going to be good this year.
Ricky's cleats. Okay, if you ever, folks, I don't care how old you are, go to YouTube and look up Jim Rome and Ricky Henderson and that monologue that Jim Rome and this is several years ago that he did this, but he talks about how Ricky Henderson always liked to talk in the third person about himself, and it will crack you up, David, and that's the first thing.
Bo Jackson did that too, didn't he?
Oh God, Bo, I know.
Bo did that because he had trouble. He stuttered, so he had trouble saying I. So he would say Bo. Ricky was just crazy.
Ricky was all about Ricky's cleats. Ricky's cleats Ricky's too tight. okay.
All right. So
yeah,
that's good to hear. I hadn't heard all the whole thing from Tuitt. And it sounds like Tuitt knows exactly what's going on. So and it's going to be how everything reacts to the start of work today. So, yeah, maybe it's possible he goes.
I think at best he's limited today, and a best-case scenario would be full on Thursday, full on Friday. If he doesn't go full on Thursday and Friday, then – then by Friday's podcast, we can probably start wondering if he's more, if he's going to play. So let's give it through Wednesday there. Vance McDonald, I don't have a clue. And yes. Marcus Gilbert, I don't have a clue about.
Okay. All right. So we covered the juju, the offense. I was a little surprised yesterday, and I had to run out before the very conclusion of Mike's press conference and didn't get to hear the end of it again. But as far as I could tell, Dave, he wasn't asked about short yardage and using Rosie Nix. I mean, he was effusive in his praise of Rosie Nix, but he didn't talk about those plays, did they? Did I miss that?
It seemed like he – boy, there was so much to write about yesterday, David, what he had to say. It seems like he mentioned something about personnel and what dictates that. I can't remember off the top of my head there. I have to go back through the transcript.
All right, so that's going to be the interesting thing to watch this week is what the Steelers do in third and short. What kind of personnel groupings they come out in, you know, what – and just kind of what the play calls are, because I think for Dave and I, the biggest problem has been it's not necessarily the run or the pass call. It's the fact that there's not, play action. And if you're going to run play action, that there's nothing in the short yardage area. There are not two or three options, 3 to 7 yards past the line of scrimmage so that Ben can roll right and do something or roll left and do something and take a look at it. So it has been in the pass play options. They have been kind of do or die options, which seems to be higher. I don't mind it to go when it's the rare time that you're going to get single coverage for Antonio Brown and you're only going to see it three times a game and two times it's on short yardage on third down. I don't mind taking that shot every once in a while, but you got to have other options, and they don't seem to have had many other options in some of these short yardage things. And it's still somewhat baffling with as successful as the running game's been the past couple of weeks that on third and short, they haven't run any of the successful stuff. Now, I understand why often on very short yardage, because guys are screaming run blitz, blowing up gaps, that you don't want to pull guys because you can have somebody come through unblocked, and that did happen to the Steelers. The first one where Le'Veon Bell lost 4 yards on the third and one in the second half, guys come through unblocked. So it does limit your play selection a little bit, but you wonder if you want to have Rosie Nix in there because we haven't seen it and they haven't been successful.
I thought Ben talking, he was asked about that deep pass to Martavis and that awful grimace of his that he showed.
He gave Martavis a lifeline, didn't he?
Yeah, a little bit, but he did say, look, he didn't turn back and look for the football to come out of my hands at 10 to 12 yards. He said he waited.
He said he wasn't on his details. It wasn't lack of effort. He wasn't on his details. So I guess depending on how you look at it, I guess I'd rather have missed the details than lack of effort, but missing the details isn't good either.
Was he disgusted or was it the shock and awe that he claims?
No, he was disgusted.
Okay. The other thing that came out of that that description of that play, he talked about, look, when we see two high safeties, I'm supposed to run the football. Even when I see maybe a quarters look, it's still set up primarily for me to run against that. However, he says it's not a bad opportunity to take a deep shot against a quarters type defense as well. So it was a long answer, but hey, I like those type of things when it involves X and O's and what the quarterback sees and stuff like that.
It was interesting because in that response, Ben was going against, and he said it. He said, look, most of the time we'll do this, but I told him, be ready because I want to take a shot here if they give it to us. So he was going against what would be the normal play call for what the defense showed. And so I think me too. I was enjoying I tweeted yesterday that I enjoyed. I thought Ben did a really good job yesterday because he got into some of that stuff, X's and O's, and didn't talk about all the nonsense that sometimes gets talked about. He got into what was going on in the field in describing that. He went through in depth on that play, kind of what Martavis did wrong, which wasn't looked back right. And then how, there were other options in the play, and he kind of went against what would be the normal play call because of what the defense showed.
Right, exactly. He still kind of frustrated about the call at the end of the half there, and
he was really frustrated. He was pissed.
Right. So he talked about that again on Tuesday morning.
And by the way, if you didn't hear it, his answer was exactly what we talked about on Tuesday. He said, 12 seconds. We're going to guarantee get two plays off. He specifically said, which we talked about on Monday, Le'Veon Bell is a patient runner, and you just don't know how long that's going to take. So he was fully in the camp of throw the ball twice.
All right, David, you're up 26-14 in the fourth quarter. You open a drive at 9:20 in the fourth quarter at your own 23. You run Le'Veon Bell twice. You gain 9 yards. You get Dunlap encroachment. You got a new set of downs. It's first and 10 on your 37, 7:41 left. You run Le'Veon Bell up the middle again for 3 yards. Clock, I think, ticking away there. You okay with throwing on second and 7 and third and 7? And then, a fake punt on 4th and 7?
Yeah, that 3rd and 7 was the pass to Juju that you talked about down the sideline. We talked about that on Monday. What was the second down pass? I'm trying to remember. Because, look, you've been successful. If you can go play action with a safe pass and you've got Eli over the middle or you got one of your tight ends, that's when you want to run something that's, conservative, that, might get you 12 yards, but if it gets you 3 yards, no harm done.
Was the 2nd and 7 to play action to Watson, to the pass to Brown? No. The short left, that was short left over to Antonio Brown on that 2nd and 7 there. I'm trying to recall that play. But, some would say you run on 2nd and 7, and depending on the situation, probably run on 3rd and 7 the way your defense is playing at the time there. There just some question about the amount of time with the lead that you have. What are you doing stopping the clock with some incomplete passes there, which obviously isn't the intention to stop the clock, but – I guess some question can be made about the end of that series. And then, of course, regardless of that 4th and 7 punt, fake punt working, that wasn't the right call, I don't think.
No. I think if you're Danny, you got to just say, hey, I know, we've been talking about getting the look from the Bengals and we've been looking for it. But in this game situation says, let's punt away.
All right. Any other kind of thoughts on the Bengals game? Boy, Roosevelt Knicks, great game. Bell, just more amazing things in that game. The offense did a lot of things right in that game, except convert some third downs and short yard, situational football. You want to talk about room for improvement, brother. And Mike Tomlin went over that. I didn't like the idea of Mike Tomlin talking about the offense and then making sure to throw the defense under the bus a little bit in there. But I understand why he did it.
He's right. I mean, the conversion rate, they're 24th or 26th in the red zone defense on touchdowns. It's 62%. But as he said, fortunately, there haven't been that many opportunities. We just got to be a little stingier when they get there.
Right. So, I mean, look, they know it's a problem. It's been I thought he did a good job of saying, look, a few weeks ago, I wasn't ready to talk globally about this, but now we're 7 games into it. And basically, in so many words, he's saying, situational football is not great. It's a problem. And they're going to have to get this solved in a hurry.
Okay. We talked the podcast on Monday and I realized kind of just, you talk about a whole game and you guys, you don't mention, we didn't mention Shazier at all. We didn't mention Harrison at all. We talked about, a lot of the guys on the defense. We talked about the guys in the secondary and up front. And we talked, I think, we'd gone through what the offense did specifically. But we didn't talk about Big Al. How would you grade Ali Villanueva's season to date? Is it a C? Is it average? Is it below the, it's not below the line in the sense that he's going to lose his job, but is it below the line of where you expected him to be this year?
No, not really. C plus, 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 or a B minus, 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 minus. Does that make sense? I mean,
tad higher than I'd have it. Tad higher.
He's had his issues. I mean, look, Carl Lawson got him with a nice long arm, stab, He's not a complete player. But with that said, I think there's still room for improvement there. Look, Ben's not getting sacked a lot, but when he is, Al's usually maybe on the other end of it, and Chris Hubbard hasn't been, awesome on the other side in pass protection either. Put it to you this way. I don't go into a game right now worrying, geez, how is Villanueva going to do against X?
Right, right. Okay, Ed Harrison, what was his snap count?
Yikes. Wasn't it around 7 or 9? Hold on a minute here. 7.
Yeah. So kind of back into the situation where he went. And look, it's hard to – look, the other thing to remember here is the Bengals ran like 10 snaps the entire game. Certainly in the second half, they were 3 and out. And we saw kind of the effectiveness that Bud had there in the second half coming from that side. The T.J. Watt was solid, and they flipped those guys around. Mike got asked about that. I don't know that there's a lot of news there in terms of, Mike was asked about, is it a personnel matchup? What are you thinking about? Any thoughts on the linebacker situation?
No. It's going to be hard not to give him a helmet moving forward just based off what he did.
Yeah.
Against the Lions there, but you're going to definitely
stick. Chiefs.
The Chiefs, you're definitely going to stick with Watt for your lion's share of the snaps. And Chicklow's going to get some playing time here and there on the other side. But obviously he's going to get his. It's going to be hard to get Harrison, up in the teens, if you will, amount of snaps there. Now, here's one thing that's interesting about this week's game. We're fixing to ask Dave about this, about the Lions as well, too. Greg Robinson their starting left tackle, did not practice evidently on Monday. He's coming off of an ankle problem. Plus, he was benched midway through that game against the Lions. Had to eventually go back in the game. He's your starting left tackle, and he's not played well, and he's dinged right now. Could we see Brian Mahalik start at left tackle for the Lions Sunday night? Boy, what a tasty matchup that would be. And then on top of that, we'll ask Dave about this as well, too. Their leading receiver, Golden Tate, suffered a shoulder injury in that week six game against the Lions, and he's still not practicing. And on Monday, according to a video interview, that arm was still in a sling as well. So that's a couple things for us to talk about here in a little bit.
All right. We have the bye week coming up next week, and we got an email about it. And Dave and I might jam in 3 guests for the week and spend, because the Steelers won't be practicing, we might spend our time talking, getting into the NFL, because I like talking about the league. Because these podcasts run a lot, we only really talk about the league on Fridays when we go through the games, and it's brief at that. We might spend a lot of next week talking about the NFL, assuming the Steelers aren't, as the Steelers turn, is not taking on a whole new episode. We're going to come back with Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Post. Dave was with us in 2013, and he is kind enough to join us again. So back with some Lions breakdown. Okay, 55 minutes in, so we're a little late getting to our beat writer for this week. Of course, the Steelers head up to Detroit and take on the Detroit Lions. Week 8 game. It's a Sunday night game, nationally televised on NBC. So I think it's 8:25 kickoff for that one. And we're pleased to be joined by Dave Burkett, who's a beat writer who's covered the Lions for the Detroit Free Press since 2010. He's been voted Michigan's Writer of the Year. I think it was 2013. He has the status of being a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. There are very few of those guys out there, so that's a big deal. Dave, appreciate you taking the time to be with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Yeah, no problem. Hope you guys are doing well.
And you can follow Dave on Twitter at his name, Dave Burkett, B-I-R-K-E-T-T. Dave, let's get into it here. And I like to start at 30,000 feet and talk about the Lions organization, because for a long time here, it was felt like the Lions were a benevolent ownership group that never put the right management team in place. And Bob Quinn's an interesting guy who went to UConn, spent, you know, graduated from sports management school there in 2000, spent 15 years in the Patriots organization, going from, you know, the lowest levels all the way up to head of pro football scouting. He gets hired at the start of the year in 2016 as the GM. Jim Caldwell sticks around. What's your perception of the organization and how they kind of how they've evolved over your 8 years covering the team and comparatively to other teams in the NFL?
Well, I think Bob's done a pretty good job. I mean, you know, it's 2 years in, not even 2 years in, so it's obviously still early to judge. But, you know, he's done some – look, when he came in, he overhauled a lot of what went on here. I mean, behind closed doors, the things they were doing with their scouting staff, you know, building makeover that he did. You know, you can see his handprints on a lot of what's gone on with the Lions so far. You know, and he's brought some talent into the organization. I think he's – again, early to judge, but I think he's had a couple good drafts so far, and he's gone about building the roster the right way. I think they're not splurging. They're not spending money on the biggest free agents out there. They are hitting some needs, but, you know, by and large, they're taking care of their 53-man roster and trying to make sure that they have the depth to survive the season. So, you know, early returns, I think, are positive, but as always, we need to see this thing extended for the next couple of years and see the Lions get some victories as well.
As you look at him right now, is Jim Caldwell a good head football coach? Would you hire him to run your football team? And is this a good Lions team this year?
That's a good question on Caldwell. You know, the Lions gave him an extension before the start of the season, and I don't, you know exactly what that means. I think there's still pressure on him to you know, win this year and win in the playoffs, get to the playoffs again, because, you know, Bob wasn't the guy that hired him. But look, I think Jim does a lot of things well. I think he's, you know, the players really respond to him. They respect the way that he treats them. You know, it doesn't matter if you're Matthew Stafford or the 53rd guy on the roster. Behind closed doors, he will call you out if you do something wrong. And publicly, he will stand up for you. And while that can be maddening to me sometimes as a as a writer when he wants to give you nothing, you know, I know the players respect that. So I think he does some good things. He has a really good staff in place. The areas that concern me about Jim are some of the game management things that, you know, maybe hasn't really popped up as much this year, but we've seen it in past seasons where whether time gets away or not arguing a call on the field, little things like that tend to rankle a lot of fans around here. And I think those are some of the things that Jim still needs.
We're trying to find the first coach who gets positive.
Right. That's the truth. But no, so I think, look, overall, I mean, he's taken the Lions to the playoffs in two of his three seasons, right? And he's got them 3-3 this year and, you know, in a chance to get another playoff berth. So when you look at the Lions organization as a whole, you know, what's gone on the past, you know, five decades, really, and when you look at what he has on his staff, I think Jim Caldwell, you know, is deserving of, you know, some of the accolades that he's getting right now.
I think when you head into this week here, a couple of names on the Lions roster there dealing with injuries will be ones to watch. Golden Tate, obviously leading the team in receiving, suffered a shoulder injury there, I think, in that pre-bye game against the Saints. I think there was a video floating around on Monday that's still in the sling. I'm going to assume that a lot of people are not expecting him to play against the Steelers. And the other player, Greg Robinson, dealing kind of, I think, with an ankle or something along those lines. I don't think he worked on Monday as well, too. Can you update what you think is going to happen with those two players? And could we see Brian Mahalik, a former Pittsburgh Steelers tackle, get a start at left tackle?
Amazingly, he could be next man up at left tackle for the Lions this week. Yeah, I don't know what Robinson's status is yet. You know, Robinson was last week at when they were leaving out on the bye week, he had his ankle wrapped up pretty good, did not practice Monday. They practiced later on today, so we'll see over the next couple of days whether he's able to make it back. Golden Tate, doubtful to play. You're right, he was in a sling over the weekend, did not practice Monday as well. His injury is supposed to be a 2-3 week thing, so he might be back the week after for the Lions. But the biggest question is still the offensive line, because not only is Greg Robinson out, and he hasn't played very well, frankly. You know, Taylor Decker, who was supposed to start at left tackle, not playing. You know, one of their backup guards, is out as well, or has not been playing. Emmett Cleary, he got hurt last week. TJ Lang, who Cleary started in place of before the bye, he's been dealing with a back injury all year. So the Lions are really beat up on that offensive line. Rick Wagner, the right tackle, has had some ankle injuries too. So even if Robinson is out there, that's an area that the Steelers can expose.
We've seen the Steelers defense this year get exposed with some of the outside zone stuff, with those stretch runs. And I know Amir Abdullah, it can kind of, you know, is adept in kind of running that. But is the offensive line, I mean, can the Lions offense effectively run this outside zone stretch play? And do you expect them, especially if Golden Tate doesn't play, do you expect them to try to lean heavy on the run in this game?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at, you know, the Steelers' pass defense, best in the NFL right now, and given the issues the Lions have had with pass protection and really just getting the ball downfield in general, you know, I think you'll see the Lions try to control clock with the running game a little bit, keep that Steelers offense off the field. And they do. They like that stretch zone play. And that's really something that Abdullah has been solid at, but the offensive line kind of iffy with. And so the Lions will try to do that. Whether they're going to be able to be successful or not, some of that might depend on who's up there playing for them on that offensive line. But yes, I do expect you'll see a heavy dose of that come this weekend.
I'm a big Matt Stafford fan. You know, he's had the unique opportunity to be the highest paid player in the league on two different occasions. We know that just now cycles to whoever gets the next big contract for QBs in the league. Thoughts on Matt Stafford, and if Golden Tate can't go, I mean, I know Kenny Golladay is a guy that came out like a house of fire early in the season. He's a guy I know the Steelers had some interest in the draft as well. What's the depth like at the wide receiver position?
Golladay should be back this week. You know, he's been out the last couple of weeks with a pulled hamstring. Did have that nice debut with two touchdown catches in his first ever NFL game. You know, and Marvin Jones is their other deep threat, I guess. You know, sort of co number one receiver along with Golden Tate. Hasn't had a great start to his Lions career, but, you know, can do some damage. So that's one area that the Lions have really struggled so far. I mentioned was getting the ball downfield and, you know, really opening up that offense. I mean, they're, for all the money they've paid Stafford, you'd think that this offense would be performing better. They're near the bottom of the league in yards per play. You know, and some of that, again, is about those protection issues. But Stafford is a guy that, you know, he's done his part, I think. He hasn't played extremely well here the last couple games. He's been under a lot of pressure. He's been sacked 17 times in the Lions' last three games. But by and large, when he has the ball in his hand, you know, the Lions feel confident. They feel like they have a chance to do some good things. You know, he's set an NFL record for comebacks last year. Really, that's when they sort of take the shackles off and, you know, let him just, you know, let his talent flow. And I think that's when this offense is at its best.
When you flip over to the defensive side of the football there, Jared Davis is a guy that I really liked ahead of the draft coming out of Florida. I think the Steelers had their sights maybe on him as well. He obviously didn't last that long. You know, is he living up to expectations? And also, you know, to hear Whitehead, I think he leads the team in tackles right now. Talk about two of those three, linebackers on that Lions defense.
Davis is going to be a good player in time. You know, he's had some rookie bumps here so far. But, you know, that's sort of what I mentioned about Bob Quinn's draft classes. You go back, Taylor Decker, their first-round pick last year, Jared Davis this year, guys that I think will be just very solid anchors for this team for, you know, two contracts. They're going to play 8 to 10 years. And you know, they may never be superstars, but they're going to be guys that you can lean on. And Davis is, look, he's a really good run defender. He brings an attitude to that defense, something that they lacked last year. And you could really see it when he was on the field the first couple games. And then when he was off the field, he missed two games with a concussion and a neck injury. Sort of the difference in that defense with and without him. So he's got some growth that he needs to show, especially in pass coverage. That's an area that some teams have exploited against him. But overall, he's fine. And Whitehead, you know, Tahir's playing pretty well this year. Didn't have a great year last year when he was in the middle, but he just seems more comfortable playing at the outside linebacker spot. And Davis and Whitehead, those are the two guys that you're going to see on the field, you know, the vast majority of the snaps as the Lions play their nickel package about 80% of the time.
Is that front four of Ansa, Spence, Robinson's another guy the Steelers, I think, brought in, and Zettel. I think Zettel and Ansa have 8 sacks, four apiece so far this season. Is that front four perhaps maybe the one of the most underrated ones right now in the league?
You know, they're not playing really well right now. I mean, a lot of it is that pass rush. I mean, Zettel is – look, I give Zettel a lot of credit. You know, he's made himself into a good player. 6th-round pick last year, and, you know, he was sort of ticketed for backup duty. They lost their starting left end, Kerry Hyder, to a torn Achilles in training camp, and, you know, Zettel's played pretty well. Ziggy, you know, he's a bit of a mystery playing on that right defensive end spot. I mean, he was hampered all year last year by a high ankle sprain. He's been on the injury report with – you know, a knee injury all year this year, missed all the training camp, and he just hasn't been himself. I know he's got 4 sacks, but 3 of those came against Ereck Flowers. The 4th was, you know, truly it should have been Akeem Spence's sack. So Ziggy's kind of fallen into some plays. And, you know, they lost to Lodi Nada 2 weeks ago. So he was their best run defender, and that's really left them shorthanded. It'll be interesting to see what the Lions, what that defensive front does here the next couple weeks, and whether maybe a week off the bye week can help Ansa, you know, feel like himself again.
You know, if you, Dave, we're talking about Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press. Dave, if you look at Football Outsiders, I don't know if that's a site that you pay any attention to, but they have them kind of in DVOA. The Lions are ranked 12th. When I think about the team and the makeup and listening to you and looking at their roster, you know, maybe some questions on the offensive line, some talent on the defense, but it's not clear to me that the defense is clearly the better side of the ball. Is it because so far this year, it just in terms of performance rankings, their defense is ranked 7th, the offense is ranked 23rd. When you think about the team, and obviously the Steelers are a clear example in this, where, you know, coming into the past couple seasons, the offense is clearly supposed to be the better side of the ball. This year, it's hard to argue that the offense has been the better side of the ball. What is the situation in Detroit?
No, I think you hit it right on the head there. I mean, look, I think everybody looked at this team and you said, you got Matthew Stafford and, you know, you spent a lot of money on the offensive line this offseason. They signed Rick Wagner, they signed TJ Lang in free agency to you know, anchor that right side of that offensive line. And then you look at the skill players and they don't have great skill players, but Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, Galladay, Amir Abdullah, Eric Ebron, you got enough that you would think that, you know, the way that Stafford can spread the ball around, that they would be effective. And really, they haven't been that effective on the offensive side of the ball this year. And then conversely, look, defensively, they don't have a lot of stars. I mean, they have some good players, Glover Quinn, Darius Slay, we mentioned Ansa and Jared Davis, but they've been living off turnovers so far. And to their credit, I mean, I think they're averaging about 2.3 a game. And I went back and looked, this was before this past weekend's games. It was the last 2 teams in the NFL that averaged that many turnovers per game, or that many takeaways per game, I should say, were the Carolina Panthers when they made the Super Bowl a couple years ago, and the Seattle Seahawks back in 2013, whenever they right. made the Super Bowl. So I'm not saying the Lions are there, but that's how they've won so far. And they're probably not going to be able to sustain that pace, but they are getting good play from their secondary. Glover Quinn is having a really good season. You know, Darius Slay, outside of a game against Kelvin Benjamin, has played well. So it's sort of been flipped from what we expected coming into the year.
Special teams, we all know Matt Prater, Detroit kickers. It seems like they've had good kickers forever. Cut the punter. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, they're going to get Sam Martin, their regular punter, back. And guys, okay. Truly, I mean, you know, if you're looking for one excellent area that the Lions have right now, it is special teams. I mean, they really excel there. Prater is one of the best in the business. Sam Martin was a Pro Bowl alternate last year. He hurt his ankle over the summer, was on the non-football injury list. Barring any setbacks, he'll be back Sunday. So, you know, with those two in the fold, they have a really good return man and rookie Jamal Agnew, and they have really good coverage units. So that's truly a strength of the Lions right now.
So what do you got? It's a nationally televised game. The Steelers have not been, you know, over the past couple of years, Ben has not played as well on the road, but he has been good in domes at times. The Steelers have played, you know, 2 of the best halves of football independently by the offense and the defense in the last 2 games that they can play. I mean, spectacular football in the first half by the offense last week. The defense was great in the second half last week, great in the first half against the Chiefs. They haven't put 60 minutes together. What do the Lions have to do to win this game?
Yeah, you know what? Maybe you guys can help me with my pick, because I was sort of looking at Ben's struggles on the road and thinking maybe this is a game the Lions could get him, but the Lions just haven't been too sharp either. I mean, it's just – it's one of those – and guys, look, I thought the Lions would be 3-3 at this point. I just had no idea this is how they would get there. I just
– we said the same sort of thing. The Steelers are 5-2 with losses to the Jags and the Bears.
The NFL never makes any sense, but this year especially, I guess. But look, from the Lions' standpoint – I mean, I think number one is stopping Le'Veon Bell, right? He's 130-plus rushing three of the last four games, and the Lions have, you know, when they've set out to stop the run, they've done a very good job at that, but they've also gotten gashed by the Saints and gashed by, the Atlanta Falcons in two of their losses. So they really need to stop Le'Veon Bell and stop that Steelers running game. And I think if they can do that, I mean, they want to control the clock. They want to control the time of possession. It's going to be a pretty crazy atmosphere this weekend. You know, I think if they can do that, they'll be able to get after Ben a little bit, and they'll be able to limit the passing game a little bit. They're going to need to keep it low scoring, I think, to be able to win this game.
Before we close you out with a score prediction here, if you want to give one, I noticed that the Lions defense has only given up 15 deep pass completions in their first six games, and only six of those have gone to opposing wide receivers. Is it because opposing offenses don't have to go deep against them, or is this a reflection of how good the secondary is?
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything. I mean, you go back and you look, right, they were, and this is sort of the weirdness of the Lions, right, they were losing to the Arizona Cardinals in week one at home until David Johnson broke his wrist, basically fumbles, recover, they go get some points, and then the ball game flips in the Lions' favor. They were losing to the Minnesota Vikings until Dalvin Cook tore his ACL, fumbled on a play that he tore his ACL. You know, the Falcons ran the ball well. They really shut the Panthers' running game down, but Cam Newton had his best passing game of the season. So, the Lions have gotten a little bit, you know, when they've been good against the run, they haven't been good against the pass. They've gotten some breaks. They haven't played, you know, some of the great offenses yet that they're going to see on their schedule. So there's no doubt that, you know, Antonio Bryant, some of that passing game is going to give the Lions fits. But, again, Darius Slay, Glover Quinn, those guys are playing well too. So I think the Lions, their secondary deserves a little bit of credit for where they are right now.
Care to throw out to our listeners a score prediction?
Yeah, you know, I haven't made one yet. I mean, if I was picking right now, God, I would probably go with the Steelers just based on, you know, here the recent history and watching what Pittsburgh did last week and knowing how badly the Lions struggled against the Saints and their inability to stop the run in that game. But that's open for me changing. But right now, you know, I don't know that the Lions are going to be able to stop them. So I'd say, you know, Steelers 27, Lions 20, somewhere in that range.
Dave, great stuff, man. Really appreciate the time. Enjoy the game, and hopefully we get a chance to talk again down the road.
All right, guys. No problem. Enjoy the game this weekend.
All right, Dave. Good stuff from Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press, at Dave Burkett on Twitter. Check him out if you want to get updates on what's going on with the Lions this week. We as we've talked about, and this is a credit to the guys that we end up finding, but you stick around in this podcast game long enough and you go through enough and you sift the wheat from the chaff, and it's fun talking to these guys. And Dave, even though we hadn't talked to him in 4 years, again, knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, absolutely. What was it? What did you call it? Dave cubed? What's after squared? What's the one with the three on top?
Cubed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm surprised I actually got that right with my math skills or lack thereof. Okay, we're up against it. We might as well let these people get back to studying as the Steelers turn. And in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can read all my poor writing on SteelersDepot.com. You can get a hold of David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, and a few of you, I think, do, judging by recent donations, you can donate to the cause. Go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. David, one of these times, I'm going to stretch one of these things out to 3 hours with you. I'm going to put you through it. But in the meantime, thanks for all your help, and I'll talk to you on Friday.
Yeah, as always, enjoy the next couple of days and hopefully no more drama. But we'll hear what Mike has to say, if anything, and of where Martavis is in the practice rotation today. But as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.